adventure in the dark side. I had some very delicious homemade Mars bar squares, which I brought in this morning for my wonderful team. Obviously, David, you're only a part-time member of that team, therefore you don't get one. But you, do we have one? Can we get one for day? Mars bar square, like a tiny bit of it. They are delicious. How are you?
Just wiping away a tear. I can't believe I was forgotten with the Mars bar squares.
Dave, there's a picture coming out in the TV section, right, of the Herald this morning. It's a picture of a person with a weird mask. And at 10 o'clock tonight, there's a program called Secret of the Living Dolls. Right? What is that? Right. Documentary that delves into the secretive world of female masking, where men transform their appearance and gender by dressing up in rubber suits. But it doesn't look like gimpy stuff. It just looks like looks more like the hackers. You know that strange mask they wear.
Goes to show there's nothing as queer as folk.
There's nothing as queer as folk, and no doubt you'll be setting your recorder to record. Set phaser to record.
Yeah, maybe not.
You recovered or you survived, and how are you?
Had a great Christmas, yeah. Absolutely great Christmas, yeah. Really enjoyed it. Very relaxing and loads of family, loads of friends.
Did you get any nice presents?
I did. I got loads of presents.
Well, hey, no sooner said. That's a big square. How did you manage to get a big square for a big square?
That'll be very crunchy now when I eat it live on air.
We'll take some music. we'll call it Mars Bar Square music. And you can have a little bit of it, because otherwise it'll be a mess.
It would be nasty.
Did you get anything? Is that a jumper from Christmas maybe?
No, this is not a jumper for Christmas. I got some sailing bits for Christmas. I got lovely new coffee cups. That was my nicest.
Is it like an espresso-y thing?
Yeah, just white kind of porcelain. Just
like saucer or just cups?
Yeah, with saucer.
Yeah. I like that. Okay.
Proper. So that was the highlight, because I wasn't kind of the sailing stuff I'd kind of asked for. Mm. So I was kind of, expecting
the cups were your surprise.
Bonus extra.
Simple pleasures.
And then my wife had asked for something which I got for her. Well, actually, she kind of got it for herself. And I didn't get any bonus extras. So she's like, I kind of thought you might have gotten something else.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. That's brilliant. Oh, you got me. Thanks. I'm just going to unwrap the thing I wrapped from you and then look for the other bits. You know, the little, it might be a DVD or a little thing, and you forgot about that bit.
Yeah, well, you see, her birthday is just before Christmas. So I'd gone the extra mile for her birthday. But then I kind of, Christmas just kind of slid in there.
I'm very, very strong feelings about that.
So half romantically okay, and the other half just completely
flat. Just a disaster. You'll have to make up.
I was working hard over Christmas.
You're going to have to make up for that. I
took down the whole tree last night.
Yeah, last night.
It did.
Yeah.
Threw it out the back.
Get out. The tree, it feels awful. It's like dumping somebody.
And not only that, but you know, when you get it originally, even the pines are just a little bit softer, whereas now they're like spiky, nasty, you know.
I always feel quite strong though with the Christmas tree, because as you know, I'm like Mr. Muscle, but you know what, the trees are so light, you're like, oh, it's a tree! Arr!
Doesn't take much, does it?
It doesn't take much. Oh, do you know what I did? Spend a lot of time was lighting fire. I'm quite good at lighting fires, and just loads and loads and loads of turf and logs and everything. Love that.
Do you have a little stove thing in the new house?
No, a proper open fire.
Ooh.
Yeah, no stove.
Blazing.
I want to see it.
Yeah, open. But you clean the glass on your stove.
Through the window and see. I don't want to climb into it. 51552 are the text numbers. Will we get down to business?
We should.
Let's do that. Okay. What do we got? Okay, I have a 6-year-old son, says Nicola, and he will replay either sad scenes or fighting scenes on television and then get upset over what he's seen. We delete recorded programs all the time so that he can't do it. But it's worrying. Why does he do it, and how do we stop him?
Well, I wouldn't even necessarily stop him, actually, because what's probably going on for him is that, by replaying it, he's trying to work through the emotions. So he's actually getting to experience as well as witnessing whatever went on in the film. He's getting then to experience the actual emotion by playing it out, by play acting it. And if you look at children and you look at their make-believe play generally, a lot of what they do is reenacting scenes that in some ways they may even be trying to make sense of for themselves. So whether it be a scene from home or whatever, when you see them playing the mammies and daddies or the doctors and nurses, whatever it is, that's all about them trying to get their head around what's going on in the real world. And so, you know, when we have, children experiencing perhaps stuff that might be a little bit beyond them, particularly depending on what's been on the television that they happen to have seen, then I think it makes sense that they try to reenact it for themselves, just to get it right in their head what this is about.
I love seeing children, play acting in that sense, and reenact. I've got a couple of mimics at home of varying ages, obviously. obviously. And I love seeing that, kind of their interpretation of events. That's, I think it's exactly really healthy, it is. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's,
and so what that allows you to do, in fact, as a parent, and so for that mum or dad, is you know, by watching what's going on with him, you'll get a sense of whether he's okay with this. Mm. You know, the fact that he then gets upset is just the fact that these feelings are real. Mm. And then you get but talk to him afterwards. Mm. And say, yeah, you looked really upset about that, or you looked really cross when you were fighting against whatever.
The worrying alternative is a sullen child watching emotionless as people are getting killed or whatever it might be. You know, you'd rather a child engaged.
Or that, again, you know, witnesses something really distressing on television, you know, soaks it all in, and then, you know, can't sleep at night in tears. And you have no idea why, because so much other stuff has happened in the day that you don't necessarily link it to what it was that they saw on television. So at least it's very clear for your son that this is what's going on. So just allow him to reenact it, and then talk to him about what it is that he's reenacting.
Okay. Can you help me? I have a 6-year-old boy who won't stop talking. He's an only child. Now, this could have been my mother in 1979, but as it happens, it's not, and I wasn't an only child. But some kids love to talk.
They do.
Simple as that.
They do. Yeah, I mean, what advice are you going to give? Just keep talking back to them. You know, part of it is
the best thing ever happened to me.
Yeah, you made a career out of it.
Exactly, it's all I have.
So there's your son's future. There,
which is a mixed blessing, let me tell you, but that's for another day.
37 years. Yeah. Oh, no, that's me.
Exactly. Give us a good.
God, you're only 40, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got another 5 months of that.
Virtual child.
Absolutely, and I'm enjoying every second of it. But what would you say, though, if the child is not annoying, but is it too much? Can a child talk too much?
Not really. Yeah. I don't think they can talk too much. And the reality is, for most adults, is that they do at some point say, yeah, good lad, you know, I'm busy with this, or, you know, I'll have to talk to you later. And kids get it, you know, and they realise when people stop listening as well. Yeah. So, you know, I
not, not, not the most pressing of matters. So no. Enjoy it if you can. Alison, a very good morning to you.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Lovely
Hi,
to
David.
Talk to you.
Good morning, Alison.
And you are going to talk to us about your son, is that right?
I am, yeah. He's nearly 7. He'll be 7 in April. But over the past year, we've noticed that his anxiety is really increasing. Kind of to the stage now where he's not sleeping at night at all, really. He'll go to bed at 8, but it might be 12 before he goes to sleep. Now, it's kind of everything with him. It could be something somebody said to him 2 months ago, or he thinks, his latest thing is he thinks everyone hates him and he thinks he's stupid and he's bad at everything. Mm-hmm. We've tried everything. We've tried the positive reinforcement, but he just seems to dwell on the negative and really dwell on things that could have happened months ago. Right. And we were even talking last night, I can't identify what it was that started it, but it's getting worse. And I'm due a baby again in June of this year, and I'm just afraid that anxiety will get worse in the run-up to that.
Yeah. And how long did you say, Alison, he's been like this?
About a year, but it's getting steadily worse.
Okay. So some of the anxiety, you know, it might already be about the whole pregnancy and the fact that, you know, he's now aware, presumably, of the baby coming. And so some of that could already be there in terms of why it's now getting worse. But the key thing with any anxiety really is just to acknowledge it from a parent's point of view, that is. And so you just keep saying, yeah, that sounds like it's really scary. And it's not so much that you're necessarily feeding into an anxiety, nor is it that you're trying to hype up the anxiety. You're just simply acknowledging that it's there, and then reassuring him that he's okay, or that these things don't matter so much, or that this is in the past. And if we don't do the first bit of acknowledging the anxiety, if we don't let children know that we believe their fear and that it's okay for them to have the fear, then they don't listen to the reassurance. They don't listen to our words of comfort when we say, you will be okay, because it's almost like they don't quite believe it, because they look at us and think, yeah, but you don't really know. You don't really understand quite how bad this is. So that's the first bit, is just to do an awful lot of acknowledgement of you know, the level of his anxiety with him, using words like, you know, a little bit frightened, scared, anxious, whatever other words seem to fit in terms of the extent or the intensity of the feeling. And then it's about distraction a lot of the time. Now, you know, it's very hard, I think, at nighttime, because that that is the case for a lot of, you know, not even just children, but even adults who have anxiety. You know, once their kind of brains in theory should be slowing down and there's very little else to distract them or keep them busy, of course, that's when the anxieties will get worse. But, you know, certainly at other times in the day, distraction's a great thing. I mean, he's only 7. So keep him busy, keep him active, and let him know all the things that he's good about, because part of what seemed to be going on for your son as well was that his, in terms of his self-esteem, his belief that he's okay, yeah, that he's good enough, also seems to be faltering a little bit. And so that's really about identifying all the good stuff that's going on for him. Let him know, you know, and so if he's involved in activities or pastimes or whatever, just really, you know, let him know how well he's doing, you know, socially or whatever else is going on.
Okay, is there any way I can help him to just switch off at night? We've tried music and we've tried different things, but nothing seems to work.
Did you try the sound effects tapes that people, you know, the waves?
I was thinking, and the whales and things. Yeah, I was thinking about
even
that.
Waves. I know that in some cases the sound, you know, this. I mean, it mightn't work, but if you're at the end of your tether, which you sound slightly in a measured way, if you can be, that idea of just trying everything, you know, might be worth a punt.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing is, a couple of years ago now, I think at this stage, I did two little podcasts for the show for exam stress, actually, more dealing with exam stress. But one of them was a guided meditation, which actually, even though he's only seven, he could have played to him as well. And what that does is, again, it's very much, it allows a child to relax, but it takes them to a different place in their mind and keeps their mind away from the thoughts and anxiety. So that might be another good one to do just before bed as well.
Well, try those, Alison. Let us know how you get on, won't you?
I will. Thanks very much.
Look after yourself. Okay, I hope it works out for you. Good luck with the next one.
Thanks for that. Thank
you
very much.
Nice to talk to you. Take care. Vicky, good morning to you.
And hi, Ryan.
Yeah, you've two girls.
I do, yeah.
And how old are they?
The eldest is six and the youngest is nearly five next week.
And is it a case of good and bold or a case of, what are we dealing with?
Yeah, good and bold.
Ah, so who's the good one?
The eldest.
The eldest is good as gold.
Good as gold, yeah.
Obeys the rules.
It loves the rules.
Sits down for dinner. Oh, actually loves the rules. So, oh, even rules. Better. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Loves she actually makes her own rules up as well.
Oh, even better. And loves the uniformity and everything has to be, you know, stickler for.
Yeah.
And the second one?
The youngest. She just, sometimes it's like she, I don't know if it's attention, but she sparks things. They could be watching telly. The elder one might sing along and the younger one would just, she'll smack her. Just completely out of the blue.
How old?
She's nearly five next week.
Okay. And, you know, generally speaking, though, do they get on okay, do you think?
They do. They play together and everything, not a bother. And it's just, sometimes can be completely out of the blue.
Okay. Do you know, Vicky, I wonder if what's partly going on is that if your older daughter is so good and probably gets loads of positive feedback from you and loads of smiles and the same from her dad, the younger one probably just feels a little bit on the edge of that. And then, you know, as a consequence, what she probably does is think, well, you know, if you can't, normally you'd say if you can't beat them, join them. You know, if you can't beat them, you just try and beat them again, I think is what's going on in her head. Because I think she probably feels a bit jealous of how her sister is being received in the family because she's so good. She can't match because her nature probably is just that she's a little bit more mischievous and a little bit more fun, and so might well get herself into a little bit more bother, but then gets loads of maybe negative attention, which her sister doesn't get. And so sometimes now what'll happen, the reason, say, for example, that slap might be just about almost, you know, showing her anger at you and her dad because you're the ones who end up punishing her, the four-year-old, and her sister gets away scot-free, but she can't really take it out in you and her dad because it's too dangerous because she'll get even more punished. And so she'll take it out in her sister. So partly what you might want to do with the younger one now is just, you know, do an absolute positivity blitz on her. Okay. So absolutely find everything you can to catch her being good in any kind of situation so that she gets an experience of what it might be like to be her sister, where you get loads of positive attention for all the good stuff that goes on.
Okay.
And that might, you know, might be enough then just to shift her out of that pattern. But it might also get you thinking differently because it's not great for you and her dad to think, well, we've one good one and one bad one. And because that's how the younger one will get labelled all the way through her life. And no matter what she does, she'll always be the one, oh, she's such an imp. You know, even that phrase.
It's even friends or something, like they'd say, oh, I can see in your eye you're more mischievous and things like that.
Okay, well, sooner or later she's just going to live up to the stereotype that's been created for her. So you definitely want to shift that stereotype, which is about really now working hard to catch her being good, give her loads of positive attention and feedback, and just give her a new message about the kind of girl that she is as well, that she's fun and that's a great thing. You know, she's really active, that's a great thing. And then build in all that positive stuff as opposed to that being seen as negative. And I think that'll shift it.
Can I ask ask you, Vicky, if you're having a family gathering, whatever you might be doing, and you're sitting down and you've got the Johnny Rules girl, the 6-year old, and she's sitting down as good as gold, and she might just read in the corner or she might look at the television, whatever. Is the 4-year old running around like a mad thing? Okay. Yeah. Now, are you inclined to say to her, you got to stop doing that? Because everyone's looking at you and you're completely crazy now. You're out of control. Or do you let her run around and just run the show?
No. I'd take her maybe out of the room and say, like, you have to calm down just a little bit. And I'd be one kind of to always take a book or colours and stuff like that.
And how does she respond to you saying, calm the hell down now, you're out of control?
It depends on the situation again. Sometimes she can flip it and she can start screaming at me. And other times she can be okay.
Yeah, and I think the key is you know, probably the tone she picks up from you. If she thinks you're very stressed because the situation is one of those ones where you have to have her quiet because she's in a doctor's surgery, for example, and you're thinking, oh my God, here's all these sick people and they can't be coping with my 4-year-old running riot around the waiting room. So, you know, in those kind of situations, children will often act up a little bit more because they know you're somewhat powerless. So the key bit is exactly what you're doing. You know, bring the stuff to engage her so that it's not like you're telling her to be calm, but you're just saying, look, come and play with me, you know, and I'll do something. And then you, of course, can structure it that it's a little bit calmer than the run and riot around around the room or whatever. But the key thing for her is that she's just not always in this cycle of always getting the negative attention, that she's not the only child who's getting the cross words from you or her dad. And and that's the key thing. And I think if you balance it a bit, you'll just find that, you know, she has to, she will need to act out less, I think. She'll be less, you know, interested in acting bad, if you know what I mean.
I do, yeah.
Okay, well, good luck with it, Vicky. You're not the only one, by the way. Plenty of people in saying that's me as well. So good luck with your soldiering in the war.
Oh, will do. Thanks very much.
Bye, Vicky. Take care of yourself. Grania and Cork said this is happening in my house. 13 months between the first two children, 10 months between the second two. Middle child's a nightmare, fighting, shouting, screaming, tantrums. 1 minute fine, the next minute causing havoc. So I think hopefully that your reflections there will be of use too.
10 months between the second pair. That's like instantaneous.
That's
isn't it,
just
really?
Keep them coming.
Wow.
Next.
No pause.
Keep going. No pause button in that house. All right, 51552. Maybe that's the point. There is a pause button. I keep going back upstairs. 51552 is the text number. Lots more coming in. We'll get to them in a second. I want to pause for a second because a lot of our listeners will have followed the story we covered before Christmas about a woman called Shan McNevin. Now, Shan was in touch with us a few times. Because she was driving from Limerick to Dublin to see her husband Eric in hospital, in James's hospital, and he had leukemia, and she had two boys, and she just had trouble trying to find somewhere to stay. It was very much a room at the inn scenario. It's a strange story, but a very sad one. And suddenly our phones melted with people saying, "We'll help. Stay in our house. What do you need?" And as it happens, Tom Moran from the Bewley's Hotel Group heard about this through his wife, and they played the interview at a meeting, and they all gathered around and said, okay, everything stops now, let's fix them up. And they got them a room, they sorted out babysitting facilities for the boys, the young fellas. There were toys arranged from Smith's, Ken Black's and all that, put in some toys, and I think Santa also delivered some toys as well. And there was a Funderland thing, and they got to go to stuff, and they got to stay in the hotel, and it was peace of mind for Shan, so she could go in and out and see Eric and make sure that she didn't have to worry about running up and down from Limerick and back and forth and all that. So I got a text then about 2 days after Christmas, 3 days after Christmas, to say that Eric, Shan's husband, did take a turn for the worse, and he died. Desperately sad. And he died on December the 28th. And, you know, I left a message with Shan on her phone that afternoon, and we all were in touch with each other actually on the show in the hours that followed, just to express our own grief for her and for her boys, Cian and Callum. So it was a very sad ending to a story. We would have hoped he might have pulled through or regained his health, but unfortunately it wasn't to be. And Shan, who was always sounded like quite a broken woman, actually. You know, she didn't sound like she had the strength, but she did, clearly, enough to get through. And we just want to say that we're thinking about her and the boys and the family at this time, because it was a desperately sad moment. But people were very kind, and hopefully, in some way, by what happened with the hotel and everything, it helped a tiny bit in what is obviously a desperately sad situation. So just wanted to mention that. as a kind of keeping everyone up to date. We always say we keep an eye on people we speak to, and we do. Would much rather have brought you happier news, but it wasn't to be. So that's our thoughts, as I say, with Sian today. We're going to take a quick break. Let's keep, I mean, grief is something that is so prevalent and talked about and highlighted this time of year, but let's just talk about one because it's an unusual one and a tragic one. I need some advice. My son lost his best friend and he's only 14. It was a tragic accident 6 months ago, and he just can't cope, doesn't know how to cope with the grief of losing him, cries a lot and says he feels he's getting worse.
Yeah.
That's a tough age to lose a pal.
Very hard. And the key thing as well, sometimes, you know, we do underestimate, I think, for children, the impact, particularly where it's a peer. And, you know, because we do sometimes think of children's friendships as being somewhat transitory, because I suppose we see it happen so often that, you know, your children are friends with somebody, then you move or they move, and then, yeah, you know, they make new friends. And we do assume sometimes, I think, that that children, young people are going to be able to move on a little bit quicker in terms of grief and that just terrible feeling of loss, which is where it sounds like he's at, that he just isn't yet even able to acknowledge that his friend is actually gone. And that he, as a 14-year-old, still has a whole life to live without this friend, mm-hmm. Which, of course, is the stage that, you know, ultimately he'll be moving towards. And the key bit, I suppose, is just to keep talking with your son as much as you can, or as much as he needs to or seems able to, about his friend and reminiscing about his friend and acknowledging, you know, what it is about his friend that he's now missing.
Okay.
Whether it be that this was the friend that he used to text all the time, this was the friend that he used to hang out with, this was the friend that he always went to a particular sport with, or whatever it was that is now just that hole in his life. And in time, I suppose, you know, once you've identified what the particular things are that he's missing, it may be possible to substitute those with something else in due course, and to allow him to realise that, you know, he can still forge a life for himself without this friend. But that's the key bit, is just about, you know, finding out what it is that he's really, really missing about his friend, and you're only going to get to that by talking with him about it. And,
yeah, it's a long process.
It is. And you know, 14-year-old boys, like if there are other mates as well, like it just might not be that easy to talk about with his mates. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, he will rely on adults around him to be the ones to help him voice those feelings that are inside. I mean, it's great that he's still crying. Not that you particularly want to see your children crying, of course, but
there's a healthy aspect to that.
Absolutely, because it is still that expression of the real sadness that's there, and that's a very good and natural thing.
All right, a sad note on which we leave it, but we must leave it there. It's life as well. David Coleman, thanks very much indeed.
Pleasure.
We'll see you soon, no doubt, and thanks for your time this morning.
Okay, pleasure.